If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you need to know about interiors and how to make it all really work for you in your own home.
I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And I'm Sophie Robinson. And we'd just like to say a huge thank you to John Lewis and Partners for sponsoring this podcast. Now, as the nights are drawing in and there's a definite chill in the air, it's time to think about getting cosy for winter.
And did you know their wonderfully cosy and luxe natural collection bedding range is handmade by their expert partners at Herbert Parkinson, their textiles factory in Lancashire?
Sounds perfect for those cold winter nights.
Quite fancy a nap now, actually.
Topical. Yes, it is very topical because today we are bringing you our winter hibernating special. Oh, I feel like I need a drum roll. This is really to mark the yearly confusion and disorientation that goes with the ritual of the clocks changing.
But I hate disorientating. I know it's only an hour, but I mean, I eat a lot more on that day because I constantly think it's a meal time. But I suppose it's a bit like jet lag. I mean, you kind of think it won't make a difference, but somehow it does. The whole day is off.
Yeah.
And some of the next one as well.
I was going to say in the day after that and the day after that, I feel completely discombobulated.
You're supposed to do that thing, aren't you, where you do with children where you make them go to bed either 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later every night for a week, and then they'll be fine. And because it's 5 minutes, you don't notice it. Well, every year I'll say I do it, never do it.
But this is it. And I think this is why I get so cross, because as the mother of an 8-year-old, it's really irritating. Yeah. It's hard enough to get them into bed at the right time and up at the right time as it is. Anyway, rant over. We're not here to lobby about not changing clocks. We're here to, well, what's first up? We're going to talk about, what's our first topic for a hibernation? Oh, sleeping.
Oh, it's very important at this time of year. Oh, also, because it's hard to get out of bed in the morning, isn't it? Because it's dark.
It is.
I love sleep, but we are in a bit of a sleep crisis.
Are we?
Yes. I've got statistics.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so warning, listeners, this, I've got a feeling, is going to be a very stat-heavy part of the podcast, isn't it?
I like a fact.
I can see she's got a very heavy notebook on her knees.
Yes.
And some printouts.
Do you want my fact? I feel now that my fact can only be less interesting. I'm going with it. In 1942, we had an average of 7.9 hours sleep a night, according to a Gallup poll. Right? Mm-hmm. By 2013... it's gone down to 6.9 hours.
Oh, that's not enough.
And in 2016, the Centre for Disease Control and Prevention weighed in on the act and said that a third of adults do not get the required 7 hours sleep a night.
And I'm imagining this has an impact on our mental and physical health, does it?
Well, exactly. And people, but it's, I think it's a vicious circle because the less you sleep, the more anxious you feel. And yet people can't sleep because they're anxious.
Mm.
And they've got, you know, also social media is a huge problem.
Well,
screens in the bedroom. It's the blue light that suppresses melatonin, which is the sleep hormone. I just put mine face down. I mean, it is in the bedroom, but I put it face
down.
Yeah, but
I think a lot of people are scrolling Instagram, or my husband's on YouTube till he is a terrible, terrible sleeper. He will not be told any advice on how to sleep. He says the only way he can get to sleep is by watching YouTube videos until his eyes are so heavy they no longer open. And quite often I'll wake up in the night and the room's blue and he's asleep and the YouTube videos are still playing.
But I find that making your eyes go heavy thing for me really works, which is why I have to read every night before I go to bed, I read a book.
That's and your ritual.
That's my ritual. And sometimes I might read 5 pages in a night and the next night I might have to reread 4 of them. But it makes my eyes heavy.
Do you know, my going to bed ritual is head plus pillow. You know, I've never really had to worry about my sleep. I get a good solid 8 hours, no problem. 9 if I could squeeze it in over a weekend.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah, I love it. I mean,
I find
honestly,
it takes my ritual for pre-sleeping. It's probably why I sleep really well, because the ritual gets longer and longer. And you've got to take all the clobber off your face.
Right.
There's 3 different sorts of moisturiser. You've got to floss, got to clean your teeth. And then I've got to read for 20 minutes.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh,
I have to start earlier and earlier. If I want to get those 7 hours in, you know, it takes quite a long time. But more facts for bedrooms. And this might work for you, actually. They did, in America, a study of 2,000 people, and they found that those who slept in a blue bedroom had an average of 7 hours and 52 minutes sleep a night. And you have a blue bedroom.
I have a blue
bedroom.
And
you have nearly 8 hours a night.
Yeah, but my husband has about 5. He's a bad
maybe it doesn't
sleeper.
Work for him. The next most soothing colour for sleeping is moss green, pale yellow.
No, that's not true.
I'm just repeating the statistics. And then silver. Weirdly. So I don't know if that's a pale grey, restful.
Yeah.
Well, it's an American survey. But purple Sorry, is the
American
least
listeners.
Conducive. And obviously no red, because it's really bad for your heart rate and your blood pressure.
Yes. Well, you know, we
but
know that red
your
is...
poor Arthur. Is in
oh,
that
yeah, but
red
he's got, he has no. He
him?
Has no problem. No, he's a zonker as well, to be fair.
Dark bedroom, light bedroom, where do you stand?
Well, I think that, you know, when it comes to decorating your bedroom in terms of making it really conducive to sleeping and relaxing, you've got to really ask yourself how you want to feel. So, you know, a lot of experts would say that the paler colours and the cool colours, so, you know, your pale greens, your pale blues, your pale lilacs, all those really soothing, cool colours are really relaxing. They lower the heart rate. But for me,
they make your heart rate rise, don't they?
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
If you had to sleep in a pale, cool,
oh,
grey bedroom,
God.
I think your blood pressure might rise.
Well, yeah, or
for everyone else.
It might drop off a cliff and I actually just never quite come round again. I think aside from colour, which, you know, we've sort of established is quite personal, I think there are some design rules and tips to help you create a room that's really relaxing. So I think, first of all, declutter. Piles of laundry, dirty washing, shoes on the floor, piles of paperback books. We've already told you you're not allowed to have your phone or any digital equipment in the room. Just declutter the space so it feels calm and you're not distracted by things.
Well, and
that
the
need
key
tidying.
As well is keep work stuff out of there if you can.
Yeah.
And obviously some people don't have much space and they might have to use a corner of the bedroom to work. But I think it's very important psychologically if you can screen it off or put it in a drawer or in a box even with a lid on it, but just so that you're not looking at something which makes you think work
or
before you go
anxious.
To sleep. Exactly,
yeah,
because
yeah,
then your
yeah.
brain starts spiralling and you can't sleep.
And I think with that sort of decluttering concept in mind, the way you decorate, so I think about using quite a subtle wallpaper or paint on the walls that I actually can see from the bed, and then have an incredible mural or feature wall or really heavily patterned headboard, for example, so I can get my colour and my pattern in there, but I don't have to look at it while I'm trying to relax in bed. And then I think the other thing is it's all about how you want to feel. Like, sleeping is a real tactile experience. So, you know, have really lovely plush rugs on the floor. I remember once staying in a hotel and they'd put really thick sheepskin rugs next to the bed. So literally when you got out in the morning, your bare toes sunk into that really soft texture. You know, beautiful sheets and things that feel good. For example, I've got some really lovely linen sheets, which I like the feel of, but it is quite rough. And my husband can't bear them,
I
so we can't
yeah.
have
We've,
them.
Yeah.
yeah, so it's just, again, it's a personal thing, but get those textures that you really like.
We've got cotton. I like cotton to sleep in because it's nice. And you can either have sort of a crisp cotton or a sort of softer,
and you don't get snuggly too hot,
cotton.
Do you?
No, I don't think so. But I mean, I've had the 13 tog duvet on all year.
Have you? Oh my gosh.
I love a really big feathery duvet.
Oh, we've had we've had some really warm nights.
Well, I might kick it off
You might let your feet poke out.
Well, I just seem to remember we do have a summer duvet, but as soon as I put it on the bed, it starts raining. So, I mean, it's a bit psychological. I've just got to stay under the 13 tog and sweat for the good of the country. I'll tell you what is important.
Yeah.
What is important is, so you can have the decor and you can have all your rituals. You've got to have the right mattress. And we go and stay in my mother-in-law's flat in Italy, and she's a big believer in a firm mattress.
As in a piece of toast.
Oh, my God. It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And we went, actually, the mattress, I think you've said this before, is your mattress the most expensive thing in your house?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
We spent a lot of money on the mattress. And actually, we went to our sponsors, John Lewis, and went in there and just did the whole lying down on all the mattresses and trying them.
First tip, try out your mattress. Like all these mattress delivery in a box, whatever mattresses. I mean,
can't be right.
No. Sofas and mattresses you have to try before you buy.
And the
so there you are. Sorry, I'm picturing this in John Lewis, sauntering around, happy couple, jingly jangly music in the background. Lying on loads of beds.
No, but we had the boys with us and they were quite small. Yeah. So it was also lying on the mattress, jingly jangly music, and then handing biscuits to small children going, shut up, we're just going to lie here for a minute.
Take your shoes off.
Go away, take your shoes off. No, not that bed. We're not testing it for bouncing. It wasn't very relaxing. But what I was surprised to learn, which I think really has held true for us, because we just assumed we should have a firm mattress because it would be better for us and you shouldn't have something too soft. And the advisor in John Lewis said that it's about lying on your side and working out that your spine from your neck all the way down is completely straight. Well, you have to look at the person.
Oh, okay.
And what we realised when we lay on a hard mattress, and it was the first time in my life I've ever been told that I'm not heavy enough. It was very, that's why I bought it. No, she said, because if you have a very firm mattress, you need a bit of give. And if it's very firm and you might not be heavy enough, then it will push your hip back up because you're not sinking into it. And in order to have your spine in a straight line, your shoulder and your hips do need to sink into it a bit. And size-wise, I mean, obviously it's bedroom dependent, you should be able to lie on your back with your arms behind your head and not touch the person next to you.
Wow, that definitely doesn't happen in my house, as I think I've already shared.
We have
an Empress-sized bed, which is six foot.
Is that massive?
Yeah, that's absolutely obscene. It's like incredible. And really, it was my husband's idea because, as I've shared, he's a terrible sleeper. And if I so much as cough or roll over, that's him, bolt upright. Oh, right. It's so stressful. It is really stressful sharing a bedroom with a light sleeper. It's horrendous. Like, I'm forever tiptoeing. Like, if I have a cough, I have to like get my mouth under my pajamas, under the duvet, under the pillows, and go, and it still wakes them up. Anyway, what I would say is honestly invest in the biggest bed you can fit and afford. I mean, we're lucky that actually our bedroom is quite large, so we can take this really huge bed, but it's lovely. Like, I don't even see him. It's just, it's like,
and that's why I married him.
Hello over there.
We've got a standard king size and it's fine. But I also read, can't quote this one as a stat because it's something I just remember reading, but on a normal double size for average height adults, they get about as much room as a baby in a cot.
So yeah, okay. So try before you buy, get some expert advice, go for as big as you can fit in and afford. Any other tips around mattresses? I mean, you picked up something. I remember you said something really interesting recently about recycling old mattresses, like what happens to them after
we're done
with them.
Well, I think you need to be really careful that they're not just ending up in landfill because they take up, I think, 23 cubic feet of space and they can be there for 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So I think when you're buying a new mattress, you really need to look into how you get rid of the old one or what the company you're buying from will do with an old mattress.
Well, for example, I know that John Lewis, who've got their natural collection, their mattresses are completely chemical free and glueless, which basically means it can be recycled at the end of its life.
And I think current advice is you need a new mattress every 7 years now. So we've really got to pay attention to how you're getting rid of the old one because that's quite a high turnover.
And I think, you know, last thought is consider what the, you know, we always say in design, what are you doing in the room? What's it used for? And I think bedrooms are for sleep and sex, nothing else.
Steady on. This is a family show.
So no tellies, all right. Unless you're watching someone sleeping or having sex on it, basically. That's what I said.
So, on that note, on that bombshell, let us know your sleep-related secrets, just the sleep ones, please, either on Facebook, The Great Indoors Podcast, or more often on Instagram, where I'm Mad About the House and she's Sophie Robinson Interiors.
I still can't get out of my head how hot it is under that 13.5-dog duvet.
It's lovely.
God, I'm feeling sweaty.
Is that a design crime?
Right, yes, still to come, design crimes and the luscious new design books launching soon. But first, this woman knows all about it. Coziness.
I do, you know, I love summer and holidays and all that not working, but I do like a bit of winter. I like it before December.
Right.
January and February.
Oh, you've got terms, have you?
I've got terms. I've got terms and conditions about the weather I like. At this time of year, in the run-up to Christmas, I really like lighting the fire, getting cozy.
Well,
I love
autumn,
busting out a jumper.
Oh, yes.
Nice pair of slippers. January, I'm a bit like, I'm over it now.
Yes. Bring Can we move it along?
Yeah. But this time of year, I quite like it.
No, I'm in agreement. And I think it's, you know, I love autumn as a season. And as you say, early winter, and it should be really embraced. So how do we do it in our own homes? How do we get that cozy vibe? Do you know what? I'm really excited.
Are you
going
to say soup?
No, we just made
my husband always gets really excited about winter soup.
Does he?
Yeah, he likes soup.
Does he make the soup?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You can't complain, can you? Mm. I like getting the slow cooker out, have to be said. I do like, when I can be organised enough, popping a load of ingredients in a pot in the morning before the school run, and then having a lovely hearty stew come of evening.
Yeah, winter
like
food
free
is good. Cosy food, baked potatoes.
Yeah, pub Sunday roast, we can start bringing them back as well.
Have they gone?
No more barbecue. Well, we're all barbecue and salads, aren't we, all summer? And then all the Sunday roasts come back in.
There is something lovely about the nights coming in and being able to come in and light the fire and have, depending on the time of day or your age, a cup of hot chocolate or a glass of red wine.
I've discovered a really nice Himalayan salt raw cacao hot chocolate drink. It's by, I think, a company called Noble.
I don't even know how to respond to
it
that.
It costs the same money as like a Gucci handbag. It's ridiculously expensive for a hot chocolate drink, but it's so, actually, I did exaggerate, but it's a lot. But oh my God, it's so worth it.
I don't really drink hot chocolate.
Do you not? Oh, no. I'll bring my Himalayan salt raw cacao. It's like a health drink, Kate, basically.
Of course it is.
Yeah, you get loads of magnesium in it, justifying it every single time. And it's sugar free as well.
Oh,
there you go. I know what to get you for Christmas now, don't I?
There we go. Yes.
What I'm really excited about this Christmas is I'm going to really get to try out my underfloor heating that we installed like the night before Christmas last year.
Oh, of course, and you haven't really used it that much.
Well, also, we're trying to like really cut down on the amount of energy we use. So our latest thing is the underfloor heating works really well downstairs. It's really efficient. I'm super pleased with it. For anyone who's thinking about if you're renovating, it's a over-the-floor heating system, so we didn't have to dig up any foundations. It's water-fed. It's brilliant. It's really efficient. Our bills haven't gone up. Happy days. Upstairs, we still got the old radiators, and we're going to try not having central heating on upstairs so much. And my secret is the electric blanket, and just having an electric blanket and a really fluffy duvet.
It's back to my 13 tog.
Well, yeah, I might even have to up your 13 tog. I don't know how cold it's going to get.
Well,
this
we don't really have the radiators on in the bedrooms anyway.
Well, there you
I've
are.
I've kind of banned it. I like a cold bedroom, window open, 365 days of the year, no heating. Big duvet. It's a bit tricky in the morning, I grant you that.
I think your thermostat's completely up there.
Why is it up there?
Because you have a 13-tog duvet all through the summer.
And oh, you mean my personal thermostat?
Yeah,
I thought you meant the one in my house.
I'm like, what is going on with your body heat regulation?
I can't bear stuffy rooms.
No.
So always have the window open.
Yeah.
But be snuggled under a duvet, but feel that it's cold outside around me. Somehow I like that. That's how I sleep.
Okay, interesting.
Your husband's less keen, I have to say. He's a bit of a fan of a warm bedroom. But, you know, it's been 25 years. He's coming round.
Yeah, so we're going to try that out. And interestingly, I've got an electric blanket. My husband doesn't want one. They make him too hot. So you can, I would just put a single one, single electric blanket on my side, which is all warm and toasty. And I think he does sometimes regret it.
I don't think I've had an electric blanket since I was a child. And I was never allowed it when I was six.
I've just got one. They are brilliant.
That's quite a dirty secret.
So there you go. Other ways, I think, to... So obviously, you know, thinking around heating, you've already touched on... I think a really good idea is a lot of people question whether you can have curtains and radiators together. So
well,
I know,
because radiators are always under the window, aren't they, in traditional
always
houses?
Always under the window. It's such a nightmare. So put a blind with them and get those lowered down while you've got your radiators on. I like a curtain-blind combination. Anyway, I quite like the two
well,
together.
It's more colour and pattern
exactly
for you, isn't it? I've just got the blinds, obviously.
And then lighting. I think lighting really comes in. As you've already said, it's dark in the mornings, it's dark in the evenings. And it's an opportunity to really think about the amount of lights, lamps.
Well, you just need more, don't you?
I need more.
I was saying this the other day. I think we've almost have forgotten that lighting is about what we're doing in a room and what we need to see what we're doing. And it's kind of got distracted by, you know, is that the right colour shade or do I like the base of it? And actually it's not, that should be secondary.
Yeah.
And I've suddenly realised, so in we're recording this in my library and I've got one overhead light between the two chairs and it's not enough. Mm. It's fine for the summer, but actually in the winter and autumn, I need to bring in an extra table lamp so that all the chairs have their own lighting. So I think you need to think about it. You know, it's quite a good time to go around your house and think, right, that might be where I like to curl up with a book or my screen, you know, on a winter's evening. Have I got the right light for doing that? Because in the summer, I was sitting there gazing at the sunshine outside.
And as we know, if all else fails, you can always wear a head torch, as you've... You've already said
definitely
in a previous
getting into
episode
a head torch.
So as this is our winter hibernating special, we're going to talk about curling up with one of our favourite interior design books. There's been some new launches that we want to share.
I just love curling up with a book.
I know, it's you're just, in heaven.
All
you?
I ever want to do is just lie on the sofa and read books. So we've got three treats for you.
Three new titles.
First one we're going to discuss is by Pearl Lowe, who we interviewed.
We did a house tour.
We did.
Episode 4 of series 3 for anyone who wants to go back and have a listen.
And I think she'd actually just finished the photography for this book when we met her.
Yes, that's right.
And the book is called Faded Glamour. It's a fantastic title, isn't it? And it's by Seco Books.
And it is basically, I just absolutely loved this book. I think I like the aesthetic of it. I love faded glamour, but I just love the complete, just totally transported me to living in some fabulous country pile surrounded by beautiful textiles, furniture, artwork. I mean, she has tapped up a lot of her very wealthy celebrity
creative
friends.
It's a peek
friends
into a glamorous world,
it
isn't
is,
it? But
yeah,
she writes about it very well. I mean, these houses, she talks about rambling staircases, billowing curtains of silk, panels of lace and swathes of velvet.
Yes, that's
I mean,
a good
I'm in.
Intro,
if that isn't
yeah
a hibernating book, I don't know what is. But it is fabulous. And she goes to see Susie Forbes' house, who's married to the designer Bill Amberg. And I mean, it's a slightly different world. Bill thinks nothing of knocking up lunch for 30, and they threw a New Year's Eve party for 100 guests. As you do.
As one does. But I think that's really is at the heart of this book. All these houses, yes, they're quite glam and they're very smart and architecturally they're gorgeous, but they're also really knocked about.
They're very lived in, aren't
battered
they? And that's, I think that's the faded glamour of them, isn't it?
And I think
it?
They yeah are homes that have some bloody good parties going on, and yeah, it doesn't really matter. Nobody, you know, people can swing from the chandeliers, they can dance on the dining room table.
It's because it's all vintage stuff, isn't it? And I think Pearl said that when we met her. Her design crime actually was new furniture.
Yes,
I think.
Yes.
And she, you know, she loves old stuff. And these houses are, they tell fantastic stories because they're collections of furniture that people have inherited, picked up in flea markets, adapted, hunted down. So, you know, it's a great mix, and they sort of have everything from 18th century wooden tables to a bit of sort of 1950s plastic.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And
that
it's
blending
how they've
of styles
blended it together, which is not as easy as it looks.
It's a very British eccentric look, isn't
yeah, it?
I think it's very much at the heart of, you know, it's a particular design manifesto, I'd say.
But if you like that look, this is a sort of inadvertent how-to manual. I mean, it doesn't spell out how to do it because it's just describing it, but there's lots of pictures for inspiration.
I mean, for me, it just gave me the massive itch to want to get to a flea market really soon and start rummaging for gorgeous stuff. So I think anybody who's doing a renovation who's maybe flagging a little bit, I'll put myself in that group. There was something about this book that just really lit me up and got me excited again. And that joy and that spark of going to the car boot sale or going to the flea market, finding those treasures and bringing them back and making your house just look fabulous and joyful.
And they're not all sort of country piles either, are they? I mean, obviously the one I loved was Marianne Cottrell's.
Oh, yeah, who's the interior stylist.
Fantastic interior stylist. Got a huge house in London. And her chapter, because all the chapters are different sorts of glamour. So there's rustic glamour and bohemian glamour and vintage glamour. And Marianne's is urban faded glamour, which I love. So in, I think it's her dining room, she's got a sort of neon green feature wall.
Yes, I saw stop that. There. I like that.
But
I like that.
She's painted, she's got sort of old school radiators either side of it on a white wall or in an alcove. And she's painted those neon green to match the wall. And I love that. I've always said, if you've got a fantastic looking radiator, you know, it doesn't have to paint to match the wall to disappear. Never leave them white.
Only if it's a standard off the shelf. Paint it in with the wall.
But if paint it in with the wall, but if it's a feature one, then make it a colour, you know, coordinate it with the cushions, or in Marianne's case, coordinate it with the wall. I thought that was fantastic. Next up is the new book by Rocket St. George, Extraordinary Interiors in Colour.
Whoop, whoop.
Which, I mean, this was a shock when it arrived,
yes,
in the post, I have to say, because obviously they're known for their sort of dark and moody website. They were one of the first people to have a black website to sell all their stuff on.
And
everybody said, don't do
stuff.
That. Exactly. So this
So that just
was
for anyone
shocker.
Who doesn't know, Rocket St. George are an online website, homewares brand, really pioneering in, as Kate said, that very dark, luxey look, lots of black on black and brass, and quite a rock and roll ethic, isn't it?
Totally.
They've got like a real cool edge. And I think they were one of the first online retailers. I remember when kind of you got these little boutique brands building,
yeah,
websites. They were definitely one of the first, and they've just done it so well. But yeah, they're really known for that dark look. So to do a book on colour, yeah, it's quite a revelation. And I think reading, I mean, they're very upfront about why they've done it. They did a paint range for Craig and Rose last year where they put together 18 colours, 18 of their signature colours. And they said in order to do that, they had to do a lot of research on colour, how colour works, the psychology of colour. You know, they just got really into the subject of colour and researching it. And then they've just done a book about it.
Well, and it's actually got lots of information in it. So they have sort of taken apart the colour wheel. They've explained it, which obviously, you know, backwards and forwards and inside out, but I think lots of people don't quite know the colour wheel and how things work together. So
this is the theory of colour. I mean, it does go into quite a lot of theory, actually.
Oh,
this isn't just, who's that then?
That's someone coming home from school. Hello.
Hello.
Good day.
Yeah, it was
okay, cool.
Good. It's not just a flicker, this book, actually. It's got a lot of technical, scientific, applied theory to help you put your schemes together. A bit of history of colour.
There was actually a bit I really liked. Well, there were several bits I really liked. One of them is they've done some really great colour palettes where they've taken photographs of nature.
Mm.
So they've got a beach scene and they've taken a blue and the sand colour and the shades of the trees. So they've put together palettes around photographs of nature or different countries. They've got a couple of case studies from Morocco, from Marrakesh hotels in Marrakesh, with those very hot pink, spicy colours of turmeric and burnt orange. So they're, I mean, it's really sumptuous. And then they've done a great thing I love, where they've gone through the decades and they've said,
oh,
you know,
yeah, that was my favourite.
This, I love that.
I love that bit.
This was the music we were listening to. This is what was on the telly. And this was the look of the day.
The
and
trends got, through time.
Yeah, I thought that was absolutely fabulous, that page.
Yeah, it was really nice to look through, wasn't it? Because obviously, as ladies of a certain age, we can remember a few of these
decades.
Yes,
I was there for most of them.
But yeah, I thought that was brilliant. And just a recap on what the interior design trends were, what the colour trends were.
Yeah, it was great, that.
Yeah,
sumptuous.
So it's kind of like a double win-win. Sumptuous photography, beautiful rooms, but some really useful applied processes on how you can put a colourful scheme together yourself.
And they've said as well, which is one for you, Sophie, colour is the new black.
Oh, I always knew that. I think I might have even told them that.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
So our last book is really hot off the press. It's come from America, but it is for sale in the UK on Amazon. It's called My Creative Space, and it's by Donald Ratner, who background is in architecture and residential design. But this book is very much a scientific study in the impact of the physical environment on your creativity and innovation, and practical ways to apply techniques in your own home, regardless of your profession. Now, I know Kate and I, we both work in the creative industries. We both work at home. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners either are working from home or are working as a creatives, or might even just have a creative hobby. So I thought this would be a really interesting topic to dive into. I mean, the book is quite weighty. It's very text heavy. We've literally, it just came in yesterday, so we haven't read the whole thing. We've done a bit of speed reading, but there's some great sort of headliners coming out.
Well, do you know, it starts with a beautiful quote from T.S. Eliot, and it just says, "Home is where one starts from." And I just think that's brilliant. But what I think, to sum it up, what he's saying is that this is the first book to explore the domestic environment as a catalyst for creativity, in that there's masses of books where home is the object of the creativity, i.e. interior design books and how to do it and how to decorate your home. And there are lots of books which focus on a creative activity you might do in your home, such as cooking and painting and reading. But this is about how you can use your home as a stimulus to be more creative. And although some of the things which he sort of rattles through, such as, I'm now flicking through my own notebook, have a connection to nature, work in natural light, make sure you've got the right lighting, high ceilings, apparently great for creativity.
I thought that was really interesting. 10 foot apparently you need.
We can't all have. But what he does,
I'm really stressed now.
I
need high ceilings. We need to move house, darling.
But you didn't read to the end of the chapter.
Right,
He does is, so he goes through those things which might seem quite obvious, art, nature, light, and so on and so forth, but they're all backed up with scientific studies as to why they work. And then if you get a bit further into it, so there's the scientific explainer, why do you need to do it? Why does it work? And then how you can do it. So he comes up with tips you can use to make your ceiling seem higher, which might be with paint.
So that's really interesting. So because he's an interior designer and he's brought all this scientific research, he's kind of like joined the two together.
Yeah.
So we've got the facts, and then what we can do, how you can apply that.
So there's one, well, there are so many, but just flicking through my notes, he says you need to create a creative space. Make a space in your home where you will go and sit perhaps every day and try and have a bit of space to think creatively. He says it's a bit like Pavlov's dog. If you repeat the experiment often enough, you will start to think that way. So give yourself that designated space. May not have a whole room, but maybe it's just a chair where you will sit. And then try and surround yourself perhaps by mementos. They did a study in America where students who were asked to think back over times in their life and summon up memories were much better at creative writing than those who just went in cold and were told to write something creatively. Mm. So that's a sort of stimulus to, you know, getting your memory going.
There are other little rituals he talked about as well. One was dress nicely. I love that.
But
for all of us who work from home and do it like me, and my yoga pants and a sweatshirt.
But you know, I never have. I have never worked in my pajamas, and I've always put my makeup on every morning. And part of me,
even if you're not going out,
slightly told myself off for being a bit vain. But it's the only way, because I've spent 20 years working at the kitchen table. I have to be dressed. I have to have my shoes on, and I have to have some mascara on, because otherwise I can't do it.
It doesn't put you in the right headspace.
No. So actually, brilliant. That's one that I've kind of done instinctively. There's another one, if you have meetings, the importance of the round table. And we all know about King Arthur and the round table.
Yeah.
But he talks about if you have a round table, you all sit equally and you toss ideas into the collective basket in the middle, whereas a grid seating is very hierarchical. Mm. If you think about a classroom with the teacher at the top and all the desks arranged in front of it. The other one I really loved was the truth about the light bulb moment. The light bulb as an idea first appeared in Disney over Goofy's head in 1942, when he has that, because it's shorthand for an idea, isn't it? The light bulb in cartoons. And they've looked at this and discovered that actually there is some truth to the sort of, well, they talk about the light bulb moment, the flash of brilliance. Mm. They've found that if you look at a naked filament bulb, let me get this right. Scientists found that looking at a naked bulb before doing a creative task, those who did that outperformed those who didn't.
Ooh.
And that's a filament bulb, like an old-fashioned bulb, as opposed to those who looked at a fluorescent bulb, were less creative.
Well, here's another one, which I don't know whether this goes up against this, but he says, dim the lights. It seems counterintuitive, but it's often more effective to brainstorm in subdued rather than bright light. That's because your mind is more likely to wander into uncharted territory when your physical surroundings are too indistinct to focus on them.
There's another one you might like too. Alcohol and caffeine give you a creative jolt.
Ooh.
As Ernest Hemingway said, write drunk, edit sober. Good that, isn't it? But following on from that, because obviously if you've had too much of a creative jolt from the alcohol, you might need to lie down. They've also discovered, I keep saying they, these are studies that have been done in America, and I didn't write down the length and the person of each study, but they're all based on science. People solve creative problems 10% faster when they're lying down than when they're standing. So we laugh, but it's so interesting that it's all been sort of backed up by science.
So obviously the book is absolutely crammed with loads of water cooler stats and anecdotes. It's brilliant. But in terms of like just gleaning a few interior design ideas on how you can make your creative space at home work, one that popped up for me that I particularly gleefully loved was the idea that the Marie Kondo method of keeping your home really meticulously tidy. And, you know, we're always told that you've got to declutter your space in order to think straight. And I think there's an element of truth in that. But he says, according to the research, the full Kondo effect might actually hinder creative output.
Yes.
I know, it's so delicious. And he says, the reason is that creativity is a messy process, and you're quite often zigging and zagging and zigging again before you get that aha moment.
Oh, I'm all over the
so
zig and the zag.
So too orderly an environment can actually squelch the impulse to think freely.
That's so interesting, isn't it? And we were coming back again to the things you should have in your space, natural light and clever lighting and so on, and then high ceilings. You said you were getting stressed about
your low ceilings.
So what he talks about is he back up the science as to why it works and then give you some ideas. So he says, for example, use wallpaper with a vertical design to take your
eye up.
Have tall plants and long curtains, again, and hang them high above the window.
To elongate the walls.
Anything you can do to make your walls look taller and therefore take your ceiling up, you'll find it works better. And
I'm still going to tell the husband I need an extension. Can I not do that? Oh, a garden office. I'd love a garden studio. That'd be
That would tick all your boxes, wouldn't it? Nature, natural light, clever lighting.
Yeah, and I've actually
Make sure you put a round table in it.
Round table, facing the window, facing the view. Don't have your, apparently, again, positioning your desk so you're just looking at a blank wall is a really bad idea. And he does also encourage you to have artwork, artifacts, knick-knackery, things that you find visually pleasing and stimulating in your space too. So, you know, the concept of being in a white box in order to do your best ideas, he completely blows out the water, which I'm pleased about because I have just decorated my home office white, thinking that I needed a blank canvas.
You did, and it was very unlike you. And you know what? It doesn't work for you.
It doesn't work for me.
I was really surprised when you did it.
Yeah.
I said to you, paint the ceiling green, and you were like, no, I don't want it green.
I just want this white space where I can think straight. It's not working for me at all. And now I know why.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's so true. And he talks as well about, you know, how a lot of, obviously more and more of us work from home now, so it's even more crucial that we get the environment right. And he says, you know, don't forget people, you know, creative authors like Darwin, Picasso, Hemingway all worked at home. But also, you know, Apple, Amazon, Etsy, YouTube were all born effectively around kitchen tables in domestic environments. So, you know,
where the best ideas happen.
There you go.
So our Facebook group has been a great place for people to share their design crimes. And one jumped out for me. It's from Rooms of Colour. And she's got a particular problem with curtains that are so long that they puddle on the floor. You know, when you get that kind of lump of fabric.
Well, I don't think it's supposed to be a lump, is it? I'm taking issue with the word lump. Is it supposed to be an elegant swathe?
It's a puddle.
She doesn't like it. She thinks it's lazy. Should have cut them off. Does she say what the right length is?
No, she doesn't consider why she finds them so offensive. I mean, for me, I don't mind a puddle. actually. I don't mind a puddle. I don't mind a puddle, but I think it has to be in the right context. And usually I do feel like you need tall windows and quite an elegant house to have a cuddling pet.
There's a fine line, isn't there, between a curtain that looks like you couldn't quite be bothered to cut it off and hem it. Yes. And one that is creating a beautiful fortuny silk swathe down to a fabulous parquet herringbone floor. Yes.
And I the fabric you have it in from. As well, it probably does need to be a really fine velvet or a damask or something that feels
or opulent. Even a floral. Not sure it works in stripes because you're just breaking the stripe up.
Oh, you don't? Oh.
No.
No, I don't. No. I wouldn't mind a stripe.
Have you got stripy puddles?
There are no puddles in my house. I don't have the tall, elegant ceilings, but also they get a bit dusty and grubby, don't they, if you've got dogs and kids and stuff.
Yeah, true.
So there's a practical element too.
There often is to a design crime, I think. It's often a practical reason why people don't like things.
Or a hygiene issue.
Yes, exactly. Carpet in the bathroom. We haven't even gone there.
Oh my gosh, tune in for that next time.
Right. So in summary, and our winter hibernating special, we spoke about first and foremost the importance of getting a good mattress to help you sleep properly and take advice on that. And then when it comes to this time of year, don't fight it. Embrace it. Get the lighting right. Get some really nice textures in. Glass of good red wine and some good books, of which we looked at three new releases. The new Pearl Low, Faded Glamour, for an insight slightly into another world, but it's a very beautiful one. The new book by Rocket St. George, talking about colour is the new black. Lots of ideas on colour palettes and colour through the ages. And finally, the Donald Ratner book, which looks at the science behind making a creative home. And that really is a fascinating book that you might find time to read on those long, dark winter evenings. As usual, there will be lots of pretty pictures and links to everything we've discussed over on the blogs, madaboutthehouse.com and sophierobinson.co.uk. And while you're online, can we just suggest you pop along to your podcast app and leave us a sparkling review? We are eternally grateful, and it does mean we can keep making the show.
Thank you to our fabulous sponsors, John Lewis, to our fabulous producer, Kate Taylor, and most importantly, to you, our fabulous listeners.
We'll see you in the great indoors.
Okay, well, so awesome, Robson.
Right. Okay.